Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The Jeff Blair Show just got 100% more brunt. This is The Jeff Blair Show with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. Stephen Brunt alongside me, Hockey Central at noon. Today, one day only, is going to be held at noon. We're going to be showing at noon. Held at noon, showing at noon. Let me give you the rundown of weekend sports. There's hockey all over the place today because it's a U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. Rangers and Bruins will be on at 1 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario. Preds and Flyers at 3:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Penguins and Blue Jackets at 7 p.m. in Sportsnet Ontario, and then our junior feature is the Kelowna Rockets and the Victoria Royals at 10 p.m. in Sportsnet Ontario and 360 tomorrow. Hockey Night in Canada's game is the Capitals and the Maple Leafs, followed by the Oilers and Penguins, Devils and Canadians. That'll be on City. Flames and Sharks will be at 10 p.m. in CBC. Jets and Avalanche at 10 p.m. in Sportsnet Ontario. The Senators at Coyotes will be 10 p.m. on City. Sunday, Rogers hometown hockey is in Wolfville, Nova Scotia. Pre-game with Ron McLean at 1:30 p.m. in Sportsnet Ontario. Puck drop just after 2 in Sportsnet Ontario. It will be the Florida Panthers and the Detroit Red Wings. Basketball tonight on Sportsnet 1. Cavaliers and Hornets at 7 p.m. T-Wolves and Kings at 10 p.m. Tomorrow we'll have the Raps and Wizards at 7 p.m. in Sportsnet 1. Kings and Warriors, 10:30 p.m. in Sportsnet 1. Sunday we'll have the T-Wolves and the Clippers, 3:30 p.m. in Sportsnet 1. The Raptors will be at home to play the Phoenix Suns. That'll be on Sportsnet Ontario 1 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The radio pregame show will be at 5:30 p.m. tip-off just after 6. And then, as if that isn't enough, we'll have Pacers and Lakers at 9:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 1 and the Bills and the Chiefs.
It's exhausting.
12:30 p.m. on Sunday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So there you go.
The this Penguins, you know, a couple of Penguins games in there. I am a little intrigued by this whole Sid Mario. I know there have been blanket denials and all of that stuff, but there's something cooking there.
There's that to me is a classic where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
Some degree of fire, or was some degree of fire at some point.
Yes.
But nothing, there's something's not right there.
Something's not right, and something's not right with him, right? Yeah. With Sid. He's not, you know, and I think this is, it's a rare shadow. Now, we've had injury shadow with the guy, mm-hmm. unfortunately. But, you know, really a career that has kind of gone according to script largely,
yeah,
since he was a little kid.
Yeah.
And Sid is, you know, there's not one kind of, there's hardly a blip biographically. We don't know anything about him. He tends to, you know,
he is the least textured superstar.
That's a good way of putting it.
In any sport. Which, yep. I mean, doesn't mean it's entirely possible that that's just him. But I mean, I
couldn't tell you, though.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't. I'm like a lot of people. I see him on TV commercials, and I've been in scrums with him, and I have no idea what makes him tick.
Yeah.
But this, you know, there's something, you know, this is a very strange beginning to this year where everybody has pointed out where he is in the scoring statistics and that he's just not a guy, you know, he's not taking over hockey games the way he could.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like maybe everything's not happy in Pittsburgh right now. And I think we've all had this kind of, you know, kind of always assumed that he would just ride it out there and at some point he'd win another Stanley Cup and then we would just, then he'd get in the Hall of Fame. You know, that it would be just that kind of career. And it's maybe I this feels like a bump in the road to me that maybe is a little more significant than, you know, just early season, yips of some sort.
I've never seen him. And again, I'll use a qualifier. We'll join Paul Jones in a minute. But I've never seen him as a guy who was going to finish his career in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I always figured he was going to go on and end up finishing his career someplace else.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, of course, most players do, right? And, and that is the kind of in any sport, that's what happens now. But look, very few discouraging words have ever been uttered about Sid Crosby in the world of hockey. You know, it was almost kind of manifest destiny, right? It was declared that this is what he was, and that's, you know, and even though he didn't win a ton of scoring titles, he's only won the one Stanley Cup, he is not, Gretzky.
Yeah.
You know, I think we all, he's not Gretzky, he's not Mario.
He's someplace between Jonathan Toews and Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, that's about right.
He's someplace in between there.
Yeah, that is about right, which is not quite what the mythology would suggest.
Nope. I wonder what makes James Johnson tick. Let's ask Paul Jones. He's our Raptors play-by-play analyst on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Paul, thanks for doing this. I'm a little surprised at James Johnson's tweet after that win over Cleveland. You know, mood, hashtag, underutilized, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a mood, but, you know, look, James Johnson and Dwayne Casey have had their moments before. Is this something that will concern the coach and concern the organization, or should it?
This is what I get my first time on with the Killer Bees.
Like, yes.
I know it's not Biggio and Bagwell, but this is
what you get.
On, eh? And the beat goes on. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stir the pot. That's what we're here for. Stir the pot.
And the beat goes on. Yes, I should know that. Look, here's my comparison, my analogy with James Johnson. And if you've been in education, you know that there are kids that come into your class that have an OSR, an Ontario student record, that looks like, well, nobody uses phone books anymore, but what the New York phone book used to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's thick, and it's full of stuff, and it's full of history, shall we say. And if you're the teacher, you are aware of some of the history, but you're going to give the kid a chance to redefine himself or herself. So you don't go through the OSR and you take it as it comes. And I think that's what Dwayne Casey has tried to do with James Johnson. And that kid, who's a tough kid, buys in for a while and everything's going swimmingly, but it's kind of tough to change. You know, my dad used to say, and I don't know what the English is, but the Latin, I don't know what the Latin, the translation is, but he used to say it in Latin, and the English is, people that are square don't die round. James Johnson is that kind of kid. He's a great kid. He works hard. But in a way, he needs to be loved. You know, he needs to feel that he's part of it. And it's tough when you're sitting on the bench and you don't get those minutes to feel that you're contributing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was a malicious, knowing James Johnson the way I know him, I don't think it was, you know, malicious. We're heading for practice now. I'm sure it'll be the topic, and I'm sure there will be some depiction of an apology. And you know what? I shouldn't have said that after a win, but you know, you can kind of read that with him. I like I said, I don't think it was meant to be. And maybe I shouldn't speak for him, but what I know of him, I don't think it was meant to be, oh, woe is me, or kind of dissension to invoke any kind of dissension, but that's how the kid's feeling. And there's a little part of him that needs to be a little bit more professional. Hang on to that, hold that inside.
It seems to me from a coaching perspective, Paul, it's a trickier thing to deal with a guy who is unhappy within a dressing room and within the, you know, relatively small roster that you're dealing with in basketball. Dealing with a guy who is unhappy during good times, because, you know, during bad times, the team's going, you know, not.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's got an answer, right, Brian?
Yeah.
When you're losing, everybody's got the answer.
Correct. So, but this is the opposite, and you know, things are kind of they're okay, right? And you come in, in fact, coming off a very significant win the other night, minus Valanciunas, against the best team in the East, and a guy's unhappy in that context. I'm thinking that doesn't play well with the coach, but it probably doesn't play that well within the room. I'm thinking.
Well, it might not. And that's when, you know, a veteran pulls him aside and says, hey, look, just keep working. You never know when your time is going to come. It's hard to take now. Everybody's celebrating, and maybe you don't feel like you're part of it, or we're doing well. You are part of it. Keep your nose to the grindstone. Just keep working. You're pushing everybody in practice to make them better. You're staying ready in case you're called upon. Just stay in your lane. And that's always been my phrase for James Johnson. It's kind of stay in your lane. When he does that, he's really, really good. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, a lot of people ask why he isn't used more, because I don't know if the coaching staff can always, they do sometimes, but consistently trust him to stay in his lane. Like, he'll make a great play and then try to do a little bit too much. And again, not maliciously or in a malevolent sense, but just trying to do over-exuberant, trying to do a little bit too much and it goes bad. Like I said, I go back to that kid that's been a tough kid, and he's got it going the right way in your classroom, and then, you know, temptation creeps into it, and he does something stupid, and you go, why? And he goes, oh, I don't know, I was doing so well. That's James Charles.
But you're saying the effort's worth it, Paul. Is that what you, right?
I think it is. Stephen, you look at him from a physical standpoint, he's 6'9", 260, can run and jump, and you put him out there, he's a guy that can cover the LeBron James, the Carmelo Anthonys. He's a guy that they brought in for that. Now, he didn't have a lot of success with it last year because I think he tried to do too much when he got that opportunity to do what he was supposed to do, right? Get out there and, you know, make Carmelo work, make LeBron work, you know, get out there and, you know, cover those guys, work on them. Joe Johnson, that's yours. Stay on him. And while he's doing that, he gets the ball on offense and he tries to step outside of himself and things don't work. And now the coach says, oh, come on, like you're killing me on the other end. So now I can't play you. And that's I think the that's it in a nutshell. And Stephen, as you said, the NBA, it's about managing people. It really is. And we know any form of leadership, there's an operational side, the nuts and the bolts. I mean, you know, like I said, I go back to when I was a principal. Any idiot can do a timetable. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's hard. I mean, anybody operationally can do a timetable and set up a schedule and you know, put prep coverage out there. Any coach has sideline out-of-bound plays,
yeah,
and offenses and stuff. But can you manage people? Can you become a leader of people so that they buy into the concept of we more than me? That's what coaching's about. That's really what it's about at the NBA. Can you get guys to get on board to see the greater good for the group and not be lost in their own individualism?
Paul, going into Washington tomorrow night, the team that eliminated the Raptors in the playoffs last year went on to beat Atlanta as well, went on a good run. I would think, and I know it's a long season, and I know that the Raptors probably feel they have bigger fish to fry here, but considering how that playoff ended, the picture I have of Kyle Lowry just, you know, at his wit's end at the end of that series, I've got to think that the Raptors, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan in particular, feel they might have a point to prove tomorrow night. Even though it's game 17 of a long season. That to me is one of those games you might consider it a notch in your belt if you're the Raptors, isn't it?
Well, it's a little payback. You know, you would be, and I know they'll say, no, it's just another game, and it is one of, you know, 82 or, you know, 65 remaining or whatever, but I think there's a little eye to it. I really do. And Washington's been up and down recently. I think they're like, I think they're hovering around the 500.
Yeah, they're 6-6. Yeah.
And you know, I think the Raptors will look at it that way. I really do. And people will look at the regular season. This is what I said. They looked at the regular season last year and said, well, you know, let's get Washington in the playoffs. We beat them 3 in a row. Well, one was game 4 in the season. And one was played without Bradley Beal, so you can throw those two out right away. And what happens? The Raptors get swept. So I would think, Jeff, they would look towards this game with a little eye to, okay, we just want to show you guys we're not the pushover you thought you had last year in the playoffs.
Bismack Biyombo in the win over Cleveland. You know, we saw the end of the game. He was left open a couple of times, actually caught the ball and was able to convert. But I want to ask you, what are reasonable expectations for him offensively as Jonas Valanciunas' replacement? Whether there's a number out there, what do you expect to see from him offensively? Because defensively, I think we know what he can do. Defensively, yeah, we know what he can do. And in some ways, he may be better than Jonas defensively in a certain scheme. But offensively, what does he have to do to contribute?
I think the thing for him is just present himself around the basket and be ready to catch and make short shots. Catch and dunk, you know, make five-footers when the ball's dropped off to him. You know, out on the West Coast trip, we had lots of people saying, you know, you can't play him. It's 4-on-5. Lots of fans saying that. Well, no, the Raptors just hadn't learned where to get him the ball. I mean, you can't have him shooting, you know, it's not wise to have him consistently shooting 17, 18-foot jumpers, you know. Mm-hmm. He got the ball once at the end of the clock at the elbow. He had to shoot it. People say, well, you know, like, how can you give him the ball there? Well, you can't. You shouldn't. But the clock was running down and everything else was taken away. And I think you saw that the other night. He is great in the high screen and roll. He's a great screen setter. Rolls hard down the lane and doesn't always get the ball. And the analogy I draw is he's the guy that runs the fly pattern to clear out the flat. Mm-hmm. And all game they go to the guy in the flat, and the one time they leave the guy open on the fly pattern, they throw it over the top and it's a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Well, the other night he got two dunks late in the game because he kept rolling hard and Cleveland didn't pay attention, and finally Lowry found him when he needed him.
Right.
And that's the kind of thing that you expect, Jeff, from him.
I guess the answer would be that he has to do enough offensively that other teams have to account for him offensively.
Just enough.
Yeah.
Steven, catch and dunk. Look, this kid doesn't cry about not getting a pass. A pass to him is a missed shot off the glass. I'll go get that. He keeps the ball alive. He's a good offensive rebounder. He gives you second and third opportunities by not crying or bemoaning the fact that, oh, I was open, I didn't get the ball. He says, all right, well, they're going to miss a shot. They might miss a shot, and I'll go get the rebound. So I think that's what you expect from him. Second chance opportunities, extra possessions, dunks, tips, those kinds of things on the offensive end. You're not going to throw the ball into him consistently like you would with Valanciunas and expect him to go to work. Now, he will get it once in a while down there, and I think you have to do that to keep him engaged and active in the offense. But at the same time, I don't expect to see that on a regular basis.
Jonesy, we're going to let you scoot. Have a safe trip to D.C., and we'll be talking again.
Okay, guys.
It's Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jonesy and Eric will have the call of the game on Sunday as the Phoenix Suns come to the Air Canada Center. Tonight, we'll have the Raptors game on the Tube in Sportsnet 1. Matt Devlin, Leo Routens, and Eric Smith as tomorrow we'll have that game. The Raptors take on the Wizards at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 1 from the Verizon Center. Raptors looking to exact a little bit of revenge over the team that eliminated them from the playoffs last year. Mark Spector of Sportsnet had the scoop. It's a terrific story in the Sportsnet website. A great story if you're a hockey fan. Maybe one of the most positive stories we've seen in a while. Mark Spector's sources telling him that Connor McDavid may be back earlier or will be back earlier than was originally expected. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, any time to join the two heavy hitters out there. I thought you guys would be at Grey Cup nursing a hangover this morning.
That is not part of our assignment anymore, Spec, sadly.
Yeah.
I think the last time I was at a Winnipeg Grey Cup, Stephen Brunt was walking around in a team something-something jacket.
That's
was
correct.
That station?
I don't know if that was in Montreal, I think. That was our one Grey Cup there. But
Speck could get Montreal and Winnipeg mixed up.
Speck, I got jackets from all kinds of things that don't exist anymore, I got to tell you.
Yeah, you drove a few out of business.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you.
Really happy to see you come on board at Sportsnet, Steve.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is good news. Connor McDavid back early?
Yeah, very good news. You know, as you said, for hockey fans, you know, the Oilers are not going to make the playoffs, and this will be very good for their team, clearly. But, you know, the Oilers are like a light switch. When Connor McDavid's watching them, you want to turn them on. Or playing for them, you want to turn them on, right? Mm-hmm. When Connor McDavid's not playing for them, if you're not from Edmonton, and even if you are sometimes, you don't want to turn them on. So, sure, he's going to be on a lot of Sportsnet games on a lot of Saturday nights now, and the product's going to be a lot more fun to watch with 97 out there.
So is he, I assume he's not rehabbing in plain sight, Speck, but what's Connor McDavid, but do we know kind of what stage he is at this moment?
Yes, he has been in Newmarket, actually, at his folks' house of late. He's swimming, he's working out in the weight room, obviously staying in shape. He is not skating yet. He will join the Edmonton Oilers when they play in Pittsburgh Saturday, and then they'll come into Toronto Sunday. He'll join up with the Oilers there. They play the Leafs on Monday night. I'm going to just guess. I don't know this for sure, but I'm going to guess you get a Connor McDavid at the rink at the morning skate Monday, and then he'll fly home with the team. And no word on when he begins skating, but, you know, and no real exact date of his return, but I'm told that anytime after halfway through January, we could start looking for him.
How concerned would you be that the Oilers or Connor McDavid, in fact, may be rushing back? And the reason we ask you this, I mean, we had Ren Lavoie on talking about Carey Price, and Brent mentioned, if you watched Tony Romo yesterday, the possibility that these guys are rushing back, that they're not giving their body a chance to heal. Because if I'm the Edmonton Oilers, I really want a nice, healthy, happy Connor McDavid for next year as much as I want him for January, don't I?
Oh, fair. And I talked to the agent, Jeff Jackson, and he talked about how last year when McDavid busted his hand in Erie, they took the cast off and he skated for 2 days and he wanted to go play a game in Kitchener. And they had to tell him, kid, you're not playing in Kitchener. You know, they got him back for the World Juniors and he was healthy. But Pete Chiarelli, the Oilers GM, is, you know, he's very well aware that, and if you read the piece, he's quoted as saying that Connor's going to want to come back a lot faster than we're going to want to have him back here. So that's going to be the push and pull, is the player is going to, you know, make a case for being ready, and it's going to be up to the team to make sure they do the right thing. And generally speaking, you guys know how this works. This is the doctor's call more than anybody else. And you know, really, the Oilers are in 30th place. Does anyone really think they're going to rush them back? They're building cells out anyhow. Mm-hmm. You know, is there any reason at all for Edmonton Oilers to put this kid at any risk? I don't think so.
Well, boy, though, but, you know, there will be, and I don't think it's going to override the doctor's or medical opinion, but I'm thinking the league would really like him out there. I'm thinking the TV people would really like him out there. And, you know, this was going to be, you know, so much of kind of the hype going into the season was around him, you know, not just locally in Edmonton and what was happening there, but in terms of the whole National Hockey League. It's, you know, that's the narrative, right? The new savior has arrived. There'd be a lot of people very anxious to see him back on the ice as soon as possible, you know?
Okay, that's fair. I give you that. But let's look at it the other way around. Let's say his return date's going to be, just for fun, the 20th of January, just for fun.
Yep.
So he gets to play down the stretch run now in February and March and in the first week of April, when the rest of the teams are in their most relevant moments, right? The Oilers are a 30th, 28th, 29th, whatever team. I'm not sure the league needs him at that time of year for hype or for good hockey. They've got plenty of that going down the stretch. And the other thing is, gentlemen, there's this thing called the World Cup of Hockey coming up in September. And to me, his value in that product, playing for the North American team, you know, the U24 club,
U24 team,
paramount there, because they're going to need every ounce of, you know, watchable product and hype and all the things that make a guy buy a hockey ticket. They're going to need every ounce of it for that World Cup. So I think he's probably more important to the NHL next September than he is this February.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, Spec. You know, I think you're correct that he is essential to that World Cup, that with the new format and all of those things.
I kind of like it. See, everyone's dumping on that whole North American team thing. I take the North American team with a bunch of young, fast, good kids over Team Switzerland or Germany or Slovakia any day of the week.
I don't know what Team Europe. Come on.
Well, again, do you want Team Europe or do you want Latvia?
I'm going to be cheering for Team Europe. I'm going to have my European common market, my EU flag there. I'm going to be waving it. Damn right.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm with you, Spec. I'm interested to see what it looks like and how it plays out. But I'm way more interested in watching either of those teams than the Switzerland's or Latvia's or Belarus's or whoever else it would be at the bottom of the pool.
There's no question about it. Like, I get how people are dumping and saying, oh, we've never heard of this, this is dumb, but think of the alternative.
Yeah.
You know, the alternative is whatever the European team is that's below the Czech Republic. You know, what's the next team? And I don't. You want to watch Ralph Kruger's Team Switzerland try to beat you 1-0 every night? I don't want to watch that. We saw a lot of that, did we not?
Yes.
It was not compelling viewing.
Now, while we have you here, Spec, plug your book. Because
yes,
it's very important that books are plugged. It's Christmas time.
Yeah, because you have Brent's got one in the market,
Your book's doing very well, and so plug away.
Well, thanks very much. It's called the Battle of Alberta, and it is about those years. Here's what's interesting about the years when the Oilers and Flames sent eight consecutive entries into the Stanley Cup Final, which is unprecedented. But I thought this was cool, you guys. You guys will remember those days. Hockey Night in Canada started at this. Pucks dropped across the country at the same moment, right?
Right.
They dropped in five at Vancouver, six in Edmonton, seven in Winnipeg, and eight in Toronto. So if you're a kid that grew up in Toronto, you guys tell me this. How much of the Battle of Alberta did you see?
I covered it because I was out. I was in Calgary.
You
then.
Were in the West.
Yeah.
But here, no, not much at all. Not much at all, barring playoffs.
Right. And this was, I mean, again, I did the math. You can't give me the rivalry, whether it's Rangers, Philly, Habs, Quebec, Toronto, whoever. Nobody sent eight straight teams to a Stanley Cup.
No.
For eight consecutive years and won six of them. So you can make the argument this was the highest pedigree provincial rivalry that ever took place. And you know what else they did? They fought a lot and they speared each other and they ripped each other's jerseys off and told a lot of jokes. And, you know, I hope you dig the book because it was a lot of fun to write.
Appreciate this, Mark. Thanks for doing it.
Hey, boys. Thanks very much.
See you, Spec.
Yeah, I actually covered the Flames in Calgary for a year and a half. And the hockey was the best part of covering the Flames.
Yeah.
And living in Calgary.
Well, Speck makes a great point, which you don't think about, because in those days it wasn't.
It was vicious.
But you didn't have the late game. It was everything started. So if you were here at the center of the universe, it was kind of a theoretical thing. Aside from when they played each other in the playoffs, you know, you were watching the Leafs, right? You were watching the Habs. You weren't watching those games and those teams very often. And, you know, plus not every game from everywhere was on at every time. So the meat of that rivalry is something that, you know, people in Eastern Canada didn't really see.
No, and, people out here would probably remember the Nordique-Montreal rivalry, and there were very nasty games in that rivalry. But I can tell you, having covered Calgary and Edmonton, that was, it was just, I can still remember Mike Bullard getting speared in the spleen right in front of us in the press box during one game. I mean, it was nasty. You know what? We got our daily David Price. Got our daily David Price update for you, because we need one every day. This is from Peter Gammons.
I've heard of him.
Veteran baseball observer.
He's not from Weehawken or wherever that other guy's from.
Sheboygan Falls, which I thought was, you remember the old Rocking Bullwinkle?
Yeah, Bullwinkle, that's Frostbite Falls.
Frostbite Falls. I think Sheboygan's a suburb of Frostbite Falls. Anyhow, this is from Peter Gammons. Everybody, put down what you're doing. Quote, Boston will go 30 to 40 million above anyone else, a National League GM told Peter Gammons. So there you are. That's our daily David Price update.
Wow.
Red Sox ready to go 30 to 40 million above everybody else, anyone else.
Suddenly David Price just loves Boston.
Yes, he does. He loves Boston. He is so looking forward to buying scooters for the boys in the clubhouse and that whole thing with David Ortiz.
Always dreamt of playing in Fenway Park.
Always dreamt to play. Love the city.
Mm-hmm.
Great clubhouse. Good vibe.
Darn right.
Guys got each other's back.
Always.
Looking out for each other.
That's true.
Chance to win every year.
Chance to play for John Farrell.
Wicked awesome popcorn. Derek Brandeo. Wicked awesome popcorn. And a chance to play for John Farrell. A dream. Anyhow, so there you go. Your daily David Price update. Peter Drury is a play-by-play voice, one of our play-by-play voices on Sportsnet for the Barclays Premier League. He's going to join us, and he's going to tell me as a Manchester United fan why I have nothing to fear from Leicester City. I'm not going to say I'm going to believe him, but he's going to try to tell me that. Peter Drury joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues with Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
My house in Budapest, my hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beauty focus EOU. I'd leave it all.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt. Hockey Central at noon is just around the corner. We'll have a ton of soccer for you on Sportsnet this weekend. The Barclays Premier League, as always, Saturday morning, Man City or as I refer to them, the second team in Manchester, against Southampton. That'll be at 9:30 on Sportsnet Ontario. Crystal Palace against Newcastle United at 9:30 a.m. on Sportsnet 1, which is great because it means a chance to hear Glad All Over when Crystal Palace walks on the field, one of the truly great songs of all time. Aston Villa against Watford at 9:30 a.m. in Sportsnet World. And then the big one, the greatest club in the history of world sports. That may have oversold it. Manchester United against Leicester City at 12 p.m. on Sportsnet 1, Sportsnet World. Sunday, Norwich City against Arsenal at 11 a.m. in Sportsnet World. There's also Bundesliga for you. See what I did there?
Yes.
There's also Bundesliga for you. SV Darmstadt, 98. Kevin Barker's favorite team against FC Cologne. That's at 2:15 p.m. on Sportsnet World. Today, tomorrow, it'll be Bayern Munich against Hertha Berlin at 9 a.m. on Sportsnet World. And then Sunday, we've got a Scottish match for you. Inverness against Celtic. That's at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet World. And then Borussia Dortmund against my favorite Bundesliga team, VfB Stuttgart, at 4 p.m. That's in a delay on Sportsnet World. The big match on the weekend, and this does sound, I would say it sounds odd. I mean, the big match on the weekend involving Manchester United is, you know, that's kind of par for the course, if I do say so myself. Leicester City and Manchester United is a big match on the weekend, though that might take a while to wrap your head around. Peter Drury will be handling play-by-play duties on Sportsnet of the Leicester City Manchester United game. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. I know there are other games this weekend, Peter. I don't mean to undersell the other games, but I love watching Leicester City. I think what they've pulled more points back from a losing position than any other team in the Premiership this year. They are literally never out of a match. And you know what? Manchester United can't score to save their life. Could we possibly see Leicester City pull out a win here? I'll take that as a yes.
Oh, well. We're asking a lot. You know, he's a long way away.
He is a long way away.
Yes.
Travis is laughing. I'll take that as a yes. So I'm going to have to go through the whole freaking thing all over again.
It was really good. You teed that up beautifully.
All right. Leicester City is top of the table. They have pulled more points back from a losing position than any other team in the Premiership.
You just said that.
I did. Leicester City's not a big club by any stretch of the imagination. They're also a club that fired its coach last year for a variety of reasons, one of which was a unfortunate YouTube shot of his son in Thailand, which we'll just leave it at that. But yet here we are, Leicester City, they're atop the Premiership with 28 points. Manchester United is second with 27 points. Now we're joined by Peter Drury, who will have the call of that game. Peter, thanks for your patience. Thanks for joining us. Leicester City scores goals. They don't mind being behind. They sometimes seem to enjoy spotting their opponent, the odd early goal, and coming back. And Manchester United just can't score to save their life. Is there a chance Leicester City pulls this off?
I honestly believe there is. It seems such a peculiar thing to say, doesn't it, guys, that you perceive Leicester as favourites to beat Manchester United, that you feel sort of historically uncomfortable saying that because it oughtn't to happen. But, of course, it did last autumn at the start of the season. One of the games of the Premier League last year was Leicester beating Manchester United 5-3. And since then, things have developed so spectacularly for Leicester. And you're right, we have actually... at Leicester tomorrow, the Premier League's best attack statistically, 28 goals Leicester, against his best defence, Manchester United, who've scored only 9. And the contrast I heard you making between the teams actually before the line dropped out just now, just before I got to open my mouth and speak, it's a really interesting one. Leicester's 13 games in the Premier League this year have contained 48 goals. Manchester United's have contained 28 goals. Manchester United are so measly by comparison with Leicester. I think clearly the world is full of Manchester United supporters, but those who aren't Manchester United supporters, most neutrals, would love to think that Leicester are able, because of the style they've played with this year, to pull something special off tomorrow.
Did anybody come into the season saying, you know, the guy we've really got to watch this year in the BPL is Jamie Vardy? Because if they were, I missed that.
if they were, then what far-sighted individuals they must be, because he's taken everybody by surprise, I think. And do you know what? I don't think even Jamie Vardy came into this season saying the guy you've got to watch is Jamie Vardy. He has just had one phenomenal run. And whether he's capable of maintaining it and scoring one more goal to break the new record and become the first man to score in 11 consecutive Premier League games, well, this would be a very pertinent game to do it in, of course, because the previous holder of the record was Ruud van Nistelrooy some 12 years ago. And listen, you wouldn't rule it out. I think Vardy, in a way, personifies Leicester in the sense that he is all about momentum and belief. They are a bandwagon. He is a personal bandwagon, rolling with such speed and such certainty that they believe all things are possible, and he believes all things are possible. And oddly enough, referring back again to last autumn's game, that 5-3 game, that was the game actually where he really announced himself as a Premier League player, Jamie Vardy. He was brilliant against Manchester United last September. Everybody sat up and took notice. And now, listen, we can hardly ignore him because he writes his own headline every week.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that he has a chance to establish a new successive game scoring record in the Premier League. He's tied Ruud van Nistelrooy's 10. He's also, if he scores, that sets him up to take a shot at Jimmy Dunn's record of 12 from 1931 to 32, which is obviously pre-premiership, but the top flight record. And I think people need to realize this guy's a great story, isn't he? Because this isn't kind of one of your gilt-edged starlets who has just kind of hit the ground running and advanced, you know, from youth leagues up to the main team. And this is a guy who was not even an afterthought, really. And now, Peter, as you well know, you pick up any of the transfer rumors or any of the, you know, the websites that have transfer rumors. Now you hear Real Madrid's interested in him. It's quite a turnaround for a kid, isn't it?
It is extraordinary. Listen, this guy, and I really don't want anybody to think this is being patronizing. It's not. It's just a matter of fact. This is an earthy northern guy who was, at the time Ruud van Nistelrooy was scoring in 10 consecutive games, he was 16 years old, Jamie Vardy, and he'd just been released by Sheffield Wednesday. He wasn't going to make the grade. He was a bit too small to be a professional footballer. So he went away to play for an amateur team called Stocksbridge Park Steels. He was in their youth team. He progressed quite well through them. He went to play for Halifax, which was a club a couple of leagues beneath the four main professional leagues. He did very well with them. He went on to Fleetwood. Now, 4 years ago this weekend at Fleetwood, he was still in what we used to call the conference. That, in effect, is the fifth level of English football. 4 years ago this weekend, he scored an equaliser for Fleetwood at Gateshead in front of a crowd of 768. Still nobody outside of that little bubble had really heard of him. And now here he is, 4 years on. At the age of 28, he's really quite a late developer as someone who is potentially England's upcoming centre-forward and a remarkable headline maker. And you're right, he wasn't built in any sporting sense with a silver spoon in his mouth, you know. He's had to work for everything he's got. And he's a source of inspiration for anyone who plays any sport at a lower level. You know, if you keep at it, it just might be you. You've got a chance. And tomorrow, funnily enough, he'll come up against Chris Smalling, the Manchester United centre-half, whose story is not identical but not dissimilar. He's another one of very few players in the Barclays Premier League who didn't come through youth sections and fancy clubs with wonderful training regimes. He too was a non-league player at Maidstone down in the southeast corner of England. And the juxtaposition of those two tomorrow should be a source of inspiration for amateur sports people everywhere.
Peter, how close is this United side to becoming the sum of its parts, to living up to the potential that roster would suggest?
Oh, I mean, that is a very big call. It depends whether you want to consider yourself a Manchester United fantasist or even a traditionalist who assumes and insists that Manchester United ought to play flamboyant, thrilling, crowd-pleasing football, or whether, as you're perfectly entitled to be, you're a Manchester United supporter and a pragmatist who wants to win the majority of the games you play, however you go about doing that, and end the season potentially with a trophy or two. Manchester United are not pleasing their own supporters, especially at the moment, because they're not giving them great value for money. You know, they're just not scoring goals. And frankly, it can be a bit dull. You know, they drew 0-0 in the Champions League in the week again. But on the other hand, you've got to say their form is good. You know, the last time they lost in the Premier League was to sort of 20 minutes of brilliance from Arsenal. That was the first Sunday in October. They haven't lost any of 9 games in all competitions since, except one penalty shootout in the League Cup. And they are accruing points. If they win at Leicester, which is, of course, very possible, they will end the weekend on top of the Premier League. So who, in a sense, is complaining? It's sort of the beauty against the beast argument, whether you're prepared to accept that the sum of those parts you mentioned for them is efficiency sufficient to please. And if it is, then they are the sum of the parts. They're doing okay. But frankly, they were lucky at Watford last week in the end, and they're sort of getting away with it. So I've been around the houses and not really answered your question, but it is a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
And a question of aesthetics, you know, as well, as aesthetics versus efficiency.
Well, yes, exactly that.
The other thing too, Peter, is, you know, as someone who follows Manchester United, I'll tell you, every time I see David De Gea out there, I you know, you give thanks, because I don't know if people realize how close Manchester United came to not having him, and he's far and away their player of the year. And I don't, if they win this thing, I can't imagine anybody else being the player of the year. He is on the verge, I think, of becoming the best goalkeeper in the world, isn't he?
No question. Absolutely brilliant. And even, I have to say, and as you clearly have noted, even in the relatively humble games, you know, I said they were lucky at Watford last week. I think on balance, Manchester United probably just about deserved to beat Watford. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, they ought to be beating Watford. And the point I'm making is that without David De Gea making 2, maybe 3 really first-class saves, they wouldn't have beaten Watford. You know, and that is a game that Manchester United, frankly, ought to be taking for granted. His record, De Gea, I'm just looking at the notes I've prepared for the game tomorrow. 5 clean sheets in 9 Premier League games. He conceded those 3 goals, none of which were his fault, in those first 20 minutes at Arsenal at the start of October. Since then, he has conceded 2 goals in 8 games. One of those in the Champions League in Moscow, and that very late Troy Deeney penalty for Watford last weekend. 2 goals in 8 games. And he has been busy, you know. Those haven't been cheap clean sheets. He's had to make saves, and he repeatedly has. I agree with you. I mean, who's better than him at the moment? I couldn't give you an answer to that question.
Peter, we appreciate you doing this, as always. It's great to talk to you. Look forward to your call on Saturday morning. Thanks so much.
Fantastic. Always lovely to speak to you guys. Have a good weekend of sport.
Thank you. Peter Drury, he'll have the call of the game, Leicester City and Manchester United, which will be on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet World at 12 p.m. And Peter's absolutely right. It's Manchester United could move into first place with a win, and I guarantee you 85% of the fan base is going to be pissed off if it's 1-0, because it's not just getting in there. It's how you get in there.
I'd take a repeat of the 5-3 game last year. That would be just fine. But I don't think that's going
to
happen.
No. A little bit of breaking news before we turn you over to Hockey Central. Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports reporting that the Kansas City Royals assistant general manager of Major League and International Operations, Rene Francisco, has interviewed for the vacant Toronto Blue Jays GM's job, which we would anticipate will likely be filled next week. Mr. Brunt, thank you for doing this.
A pleasure.
Safe travels.
Yeah, thanks.
Hockey Central at noon is next. Have a great weekend, everybody.